Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Qu'est-ce qu'on n'a pas écrit sur elle et moi?
On prétend que nous tuons de sang-froid.
C'est pas drôle, mais on est bien obligé
de faire taire celui qui se met à gueuler. Bonnie and Clyde.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This past weekend in L.A., 10,000 fans gathered to honor a singer who died 20 years ago, both for the music he made and the company he kept, including beautiful women like Brigitte Bardot and Jane Birkin. The man of the hour was the French songwriter and professional provocateur Serge Gainsbourg, who is also the subject of a new biopic opening tonight at Film Forum. It's called Gainsbourg, A Heroic Life. In a moment, we'll talk with Gainsbourg biographer Sylvie Simmons, but first, let's catch up with Sean Lennon, who performed at last weekend's tribute concert and now joins me in the studio. Sean, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
So, you performed a few of Serge Gainsbourg's songs.
Yeah, I actually had to sing about five of them, which was more than I thought would be possible, because memorizing French songs, French lyrics, is not quite as easy as in English.
Do you speak French?
I would say that I'm on the cusp of being fluent, but not quite. I mean, I can get around, but it was a challenge to memorize Serge's words, because he actually doesn't speak in simple French. I mean, he's really sort of, you know, a wordsmith. He has a lot of wordplay, and he uses a lot of odd vernacular to fit the rhythm or rhyme and meaning. So a lot of the French, even if you speak French, it's hard to get, you know, at first glance.
Right. Now, you say you did a number of songs. It was you and Charlotte Kemp Mull performing as Ghost of a Sabretoothed Tiger.
Yeah, right? or you can call us the abbreviation, which is the GHOST, because the acronym of G-O-A-S-T-T is the GHOST, if it's too complicated to say our full name. But yeah, we have a band, and we've put out one record called The Acoustic Sessions, and we're working on a second.
And you know, are you both longtime fans of Gainsbourg?
Well, I can only speak for myself, and I am a longtime fan. I think I discovered Serge's work probably in my teens. I was really interested in, you know, researching music from the 60s, and I was really interested in a lot of Brazilian music, like bossa nova and Tom Jobim, and Serge Gainsbourg, you know, he's sort of he's a major figure in European music history, in world music history, really. And I'm always a fan of people who are who spend a lot of time on the architecture of their words and the arrangements and the chords, and he's somebody who does that.
Well, and probably most famous for a song that was controversial, maybe not for its words, but for the other sounds, and that's the song Je t'aime, moi non plus. I love you, me neither.
Yeah.
And this is one of the songs you and Charlotte sang.
Yeah, apparently he based it on a quote from Dali talking about Picasso, and he said, Picasso is a painter, a Spanish painter, so am I. Picasso is a genius, so am I. Picasso is a communist, neither am I. And Serge liked that sort of quip of saying, moi non plus. So he wrote, Je t'aime moi non plus, and I'm sure he knew that it was going to be controversial, but I don't think he knew the degree to which it would be. It was completely censored in England for a long time, even though it was a popular song there. And,
well, and the Vatican came out against
it. The Vatican spoke out against it.
Was it hard to perform this song?
Not so much for me. I would say the other part of the female part of the song is the one that requires more emotive
how are you going to describe this?
Yeah, emotive commitment, I would say. But let's just say at the end of it, I, you know, we had a cigarette and it was fine.
We're speaking with Sean Lennon, who this past weekend was part of the Serge Gainsbourg tribute concert in L.A. This is the song we're talking about, Je t'aime, by Serge Gainsbourg with Jane Birkin.
Je veux, je veux, je veux.
Oh, there's so much more where that came from. The song is Je t'aime, moi non plus, 1969 tune by Serge Gainsbourg with Jane Birkin. Is this still steamy in 2011, would you say, Sean?
I think it's, for me personally, it's a pretty sexy song. I can't think of a sexier one.
It sort of opened the floodgates for Tonight's the Night by Rod Stewart, Donna Summer with I Feel Love, a lot of...
Prince's entire career.
Very good.
Yeah.
A lot of panting and moaning and stuff. Very successful, but as Sean said before, a very controversial song as well. And we're looking at the life and music of Serge Gainsbourg, who is the subject of the book Serge Gainsbourg, A Fistful of Gitan, by Sylvie Simmons, who joins us on the line from San Francisco. Sylvie, welcome to Soundcheck, first of all.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
He was already well on his way to being a kind of major figure by 1969. Does Je T'aime put him on the map in a way that no other song would do?
It depends which map you're putting him on, really. He's a strange character because he was well-known in France, but he wasn't really well-known as a performer in France at that point. He was more of a kind of character who was sort of writing for other people, and usually beautiful women, starting with Juliette Greco, and you mentioned Brigitte Bardot as being one of them, and played Bonnie and Clyde. Fantastic mm-hmm. song at the beginning there. So he wasn't one of these people who was kind of like, you know, John Lennon or Johnny Rotten rolled into one as he became in later years. At that point, it certainly put him on the map internationally or outside of countries where, you know, people didn't sort of speak French.
Mm-hmm. And the idea of, you know, him being with Jane Birkin, this, you know, much younger, very lovely and later to become quite famous British actress, she was not the original voice on the song, was she?
No, that was Bardot.
It was Brigitte Bardot.
He got done an even steamier version of it. I've heard it. It's really good. Yes, apparently they did it in one little kind of closed-off glass booth that did get rather steamed up at the end of it. But at the time, they were having a grand affair, Gainsbourg and Bardot, and she was married to an international playboy, one of those guys with the hairy chest and the medallion hanging down, always in the tabloid papers. And he got rather upset at the idea of her releasing it. And so to avoid scandal, Gainsbourg took it off the market, put it in a drawer, and I think he asked just about everybody else he met to do it with him, who was a woman, including Marianne Faithfull.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jane stepped into the picture and did a beautiful version, absolutely innocent choir girl kind of thing, and which made it somehow even more perverted.
Well, a couple of years ago, actually about 7 or 8 years ago, Jane Birkin was on Soundcheck. It was actually September of 2003, and she told us that you know, she told us actually about how she first met Serge Gainsbourg.
And I went to France for an audition, and that's where I got a film which was called Slogan. And I met the incredibly arrogant and dandified Serge Gainsbourg, who I took an immediate dislike to, which just means that you never know. When afterwards he danced with me, because I pulled him onto the dance floor and he walked on my feet, I thought, this has to be the most divine person in the world who pretends he knows how to do everything and in fact he can't dance.
They were together for 13 years. They lived together for 13 years and have sort of been linked forever after in many people's minds. Sylvie, despite the fact that Gainsbourg was such a provocateur, he is considered a national treasure in France, isn't he?
He is, yes.
How did that happen?
You know, this is one of the questions that I said, don't let him ask me this, because otherwise everybody's going to be sitting there for 4 hours and I still won't have been able to answer it in any way that's definitive. He really was a kind of archetypal Frenchman in many ways, you know, in that you mentioned the kind of the younger woman thing and the sort of, you know, the seedy old man thing. He was almost the, you know, the definition of that. But he was also somebody who wasn't just a songwriter, wasn't just a singer. You know, he just did a bit of everything, apart from sort of single-handedly liberating French pop, which had a very bad international reputation. He was also just this character who was constantly on TV being provocative. He was a poet. He was kind of a punk in a strange sort of way. He was a writer. He did ads. He was an actor. He was, you know, so I think you better stop me now, because at this point people will be going out, buying drinks, coming back, and I'll still be saying why. But really, the sort of, I think the important thing is why he didn't become this huge star outside of France.
And why was that?
Well, partly because, you know, the whole, I've given myself a hard one, haven't I? It's partly because the international music business, which is dominated by the English-speaking countries, always wants this ever-changing, constantly changing sense of cooldom and what's hip. And so people, you know, the movement, there's so much movement going on in it. Whereas Gainsbourg,
I mean,
France was left to his own devices.
But he seemed to move from one thing to another. You know, he would go from, you know, kind of chanson to pop to rock and then eventually to reggae. And the reason I asked you the question to begin with of why he's considered a French national treasure, when he did his reggae kind of parody on La Marseillaise, that was a huge scandal, wasn't it?
Yes, he really was, a provocateur. You mentioned that yourself. He totally was a provocateur. He did this, and he was a strange character as a human being, as Jane Birkin would always say, because he was very, very shy, and he would make these provocations and then kind of run away a bit upset at the reaction. You know, one of the reasons, I mean, at one point he also did an album called Rock Around the Bunker, which was kind of Nazi rock.
Right.
And this was a Jewish guy who was forced very humiliatingly to wear the yellow star when Paris was occupied by the Germans. He was mortified by this. He was 13, 14 years old. It was something that had a major impact in his life. But he put out this provocative kind of Nazi rock thing, you know, almost like, you know, springtime for Hitler and
right.
the producers.
And then in 1978, he recorded this reggae version of the French national anthem, the Marseillaise, with some of the great reggae musicians in Jamaica, and it caused a stir both there and back home. Serge Gainsbourg from 1978, aux armes, etc. Just that chorus, to arms, etc., really got under the skin of a lot of veterans in France in 1978 when Gainsbourg made this recording. In a moment, we continue our look at the life and legacy of Serge Gainsbourg with his biographer, Sylvie Simmons, and with musician Sean Lennon. So stay with us. This is Soundcheck. Soundcheck, I'm John Schaefer. More now on the life and legacy of the French singer, songwriter, and king of provocation, Serge Gainsbourg. He died 20 years ago, but has lately been the focus of much attention. I mentioned last weekend artists like Mike Patton and Beck performed as part of a tribute concert to the man and his work, and there's a new biopic called Gainsbourg, A Heroic Life, opening at the Film Forum tonight. Now, most of his work was recorded in French, but he did record a few songs like this one, Comic Strip, in English. This is with Brigitte Bardot. That hasn't stopped many artists from covering his work, including Sean Lennon, who was at that tribute concert last weekend in L.A., and with me again in the studio. And Sean, you've covered Comic Strip with Ghost.
Yeah, well, we did it in a way that we thought wouldn't upset French people, because Serge Gainsbourg, obviously, he's a sort of, a great figure in French, you know, culture, and we wouldn't want to disrespect his music. So instead of trying to do a regular cover version that was replicating the original and just doing that badly, we changed it completely and sort of turned it into a kind of more fun postmodern hip-hop kind of thing. And it was interesting because I also would probably never rap in English, because I think American culture might frown on that. But I thought that if I rapped in French, no one would really think it was, you know, too contrived. It would, or maybe it was some contrived enough that they wouldn't bother them. And for the French, actually, they did like the version of it, because I've seen a lot of people cover Serge Sands, and French, you know, the French could be like, oh, that's, you know, they can easily not like it because it's, the music is so important to them. So they tend to like this because it's so playful and different.
Let's hear a little bit of this version of Comic Strip from Sean Lennon's group Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger. The Serge Gainsbourg song Comic Strip in a version by the duo Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger. That's my guest Sean Lennon and Charlotte Kemp Mull. And you're stepping into some big shoes, both you and Charlotte here, Serge and Brigitte Bardot.
Well, in this cover version, it felt pretty easy and playful and fun, but we did feel a lot of pressure when we performed it with the Hollywood Symphony and Jean-Claude Vanier, who was the original arranger and composer mm-hmm. with Serge on the Melody Nelson album, and he was there conducting. So that was the moment, you know, when we felt a lot of pressure to live up to the music.
You mentioned before you were like looking back at music of the 60s. It's how you discovered Gainsbourg. Mm-hmm. Did he know your dad? Did he ever meet any of the Beatles?
I haven't heard any stories about them meeting, but I know that they were aware of each other for sure. I know that my father, I think, met Brigitte Bardot at one point, but I'm not really a historian in that way. But I do think that, in terms of the conversation earlier, I think that the reason that Serge is not respected in the same way outside of France as he is within France is really because I think the thing that makes him most incredible to French people is that he's a writer of words in a class that's higher than everyone else. He plays with words kind of the way Nabokov played with words in his novels and poems. And he was actually a fan of Nabokov. I know he was trying to write a record based on Lolita, but he couldn't get the rights because Nabokov was working with Kubrick already. And so, you know, that's the kind of writer he is. I think that it's impossible if you don't speak French to have any sense for how very clever he is. But obviously I'm not a biographer, but I feel that if he didn't have that, if he had all the other talents, the sexiness, the charisma, the eccentricity, and the musical talent, but he didn't have that ability to write words the way that a real writer did, then he wouldn't have reached that level of that highest echelon of French a celebrity, because the French they prize the lyrics above all with music.
So even with, you know, all this string of famous and beautiful women, once that had receded, we still talk about him because, as you say,
because he's a great writer. I mean, in the high level, there's so much wordplay and it's so clever. And if you read the lyrics to an album like Melody Nelson, it works on so many levels, and the narrative and the cleverness is imbued in so many aspects of the words that it's impossible to deny his greatness.
Well, as you say, you're not a biographer, but Sylvie Simmons certainly is, and she's still on the line with us. And Sylvie, you know, the kind of double entendres, the triple layers of meaning in some of his texts, does this work against him in terms of, you know, enabling his music to be more widely known outside of the Francophone world?
Well, first of all, I have to say I entirely agree with what Sean said there. It's exactly right.
Thank you.
Prize words. You've got it in one there. And also, he's right exactly in saying that Gainsbourg didn't just kind of come up with, like, great French poetry. He also used to use words as kind of percussion and sound and everything else. Everything musically and also verbally was part of his palette. You know, he could do, as John was talking about, you know, playing with the Hollywood Symphony and getting this kind of playful, fun thing going. That was such a Gainsbourg thing, because he just played with anything. He would have put rap in there too, and in fact did do rap later. So, you know, he would put in some classical music, and he would put in comic book stuff, and it was just all part of the same thing for him.
So he seems to
answer the question, yes, I mean, there was a problem with Gainsbourg becoming hugely popular outside of French-speaking countries, because there was this one element that really didn't work. I mean, you could maybe pick up on the percussive sounds or the beauty of the words, but, you know, you couldn't get all of these little sort of triple entendres that were going on. And a lot of French people didn't get all of them because, again, as Sean said earlier, in fact, I hope he writes the next book, it really was fantastic wordplay, and it was a very complicated, strange version of French.
Except they did understand La Sucette, I think. Even though the woman who sang it, the girl who sang it, didn't understand.
Well, she was, what, six? That was France Gall who sang?
Yeah, I think she was 18, but that's a
funny
story.
Yeah, they always like to say she was a baby. Yeah,
it's a very, very suggestive song, and I believe there's a video on YouTube of her doing it on a French TV show in the mid-60s. It's just incredibly sleazy, but she's this image of purity and innocence. We're talking about Serge Gainsbourg, and the language issue has not stopped people from covering his songs. For example, the band Beirut with La Javanaise.
J'ai vu, j'en ai bavé par vous, mon amour. Avant d'avoir le vent de vous, mon amour. Ne vous déplaise. Rendons sans la javanaise. Nous aimions le temps de nos chansons.
The band Beirut covering songs by Serge Gainsbourg. That's La Javanaise. Luna, Sonic Youth, Portishead have sampled him, De La Soul sampled him. But Sylvie, the end of the story is not necessarily a happy one. I mean, alcoholism, some just like really kind of foul-mouthed television appearances. You know, what do we, I mean, what do you make of all this recent surge of interest in him now?
Surge of Serge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect answer, really. I mean, he was ready for a surge. The interest has been there all the time, really. I mean, I have to sort of say, I mean, you didn't mention this, but I wrote this book ages and ages and ages ago, and I'm actually right now writing a book on Leonard Cohen, so it's actually hard for me to sort of just jump back to thinking about all the things on Serge Gainsbourg here. So if I'm not being a press-the-button answer, I apologize.
That's fine. It's just, you know, it struck us all that, you know, there's...
But it's been
ongoing,
to answer your question. I mean, it's been ongoing, you know, while he was still alive, towards the end of his life. He was getting picked up by the kind of easy-listening, kind of kitsch audience for the beautiful arrangements in the songs.
That's
they had no
Jarvis
idea what
Cocker
they were about.
Jarvis Cocker from Pulp cites him as a big influence from the 90s.
Absolutely.
And many other people, too. And now there's this movie opening at the Film Forum on the life of Serge Gainsbourg. We've been speaking with Sylvie Simmons, music writer and author of the Serge Gainsbourg biography, and with Sean Lennon, half of the group Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger, who recently performed some Gainsbourg songs at the tribute concert in L.A. And to both of you, thank you for being here on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for our program now. Next time, Lenny Kravitz joins us to talk about racism leveled at President Obama, addressed in the title track of his new album, Black and White America. Plus, New York's Opera Omnia brings us their take on the most popular opera of the 17th century. Soundcheck's technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer, and we had help today from Margaret Bresnahan. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.